Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show on the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. And I'm excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you? And
I'm
can't
awesome.
Believe we're sitting here in February, you know, and it's cold, at least in California. You're not cold, but again,
no, I'm sweating, actually. I had to take my jacket off.
I don't want to hear that
hot.
In California, it's warm. Then I need to come to California once. I know people are traveling, and Dave, you're going to be traveling soon too, right?
London in June, if you know, cross our fingers.
Okay,
we'll see.
So I
was already canceled. We're supposed to do it in March.
I would bank on our guest being in Pittsburgh in July more than you, if I was a betting man. But okay, so go ahead and introduce our guest.
We have comedian Steve Trevino, and he is a very good comedian. He's doing this whole thing about the pandemic and being locked down. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I almost feel like I need my fake background, like you guys. it looks like a studio back there. Then you've got Chris Rock in the background over there, which is pretty cool.
Well, yeah, that's
Times Square.
That's the Times Square. He had this picture up in Times Square.
Yeah.
So I don't have something like that. I'm waiting for that, right?
Steve, I spoke at NASDAQ, and that was the little frosting on the cake. Oh, we'll put your picture on the Jumbotron.
Perfect. Everybody now looks like they're in a real studio, right? It's perfect.
Exactly.
We'll work on it. Work on it.
Yeah, but Steve, kind of like jumping really quickly, we'll start out. Did you always want to be a comedian, Steve?
You know what? I remember my dad and my uncles are probably the toughest men I've ever met in my life. Vietnam veterans. I mean, just real tough dudes. And back in the day, you know, the dads would hang out in the backyard and the moms would hang out in the inside. And I remember one time when I was a very little kid, they were all together inside watching HBO. And I remember seeing Richard Pryor on stage and watching everybody laugh. And that's when I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And I must have been, I don't know, 6, 7 years old.
Wow.
And ever since then, it's been what I've done.
That's your passion, right?
Yeah. Well, not only is it my passion, I don't think I have any other life skills other than, you know, because I graduated high school, went to a comedy club, and I've never had a job. So
wow,
I've been doing stand-up comedy now for going on 22 years.
So when you're talking about school, were you a class com? I'm a former teacher, so tell me how you would mess with teachers. Were you not?
I was definitely a class clown. I was definitely very charming, but I was also a bully, and I would use my my tongue for bad things. And now, you know, I've really grown up and changed a lot, but I was definitely the class clown, and I love making fun of people back then. And now I just, you know, I making fun of people other than my wife is not what I do.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. I heard a set where you were just tearing her apart. I'm surprised you're still married. Are you still married?
I am still married because all
how
the
does she put up with that?
All the proceeds from my stand-up go to my wife.
Oh,
I like that one. All of us.
And she goes to Macy's. Okay. Yeah, I heard that.
That's perfect. It's perfect.
You're hilarious.
So let's kind of start the, you know, we talked about, it's interesting, this comedian / traumatic brain type of week. I don't know. I get themes and I don't even schedule these themes for my network. And we're talking to an amazing comedian, but if you knew Steve, it'll come to me in a second, that he's a genius of a comedian, but his name will come to me in a second later in our conversation. But he again was with Frank Sinatra for 12 years. So it'll come to me, his name, and
hopefully
for forgetting that. And he wrote a book and all this. He's about 80 something. It was a phenomenal.
Is it Don Rickles?
No, it's not. It's not Don. He was with Frank for 12 years, traveling everywhere. It'll come to me in a second. But
is he well known or just a nobody?
Was your pack? Like, no, he's very well known. He's okay. There's gonna be a Netflix plus. I mean, he's been in movies, everything. It'll come to me. WKRP in Cincinnati. He was he comboed with Tim Reed.
I feel like we're on a game show, right? Where I have to like guess.
Is that steak? But if we're doing radio, I already would have looked it up. But with Tim Reed, he was the only black and white tandem in comedy ever. And see, isn't that funny, his name? But he was phenomenal, but he taught us so many different things, a comedian. And he talked about how did you kind of hone your craft as a comedian? Opening.
For me, I found myself in LA and I found myself, you know, I grew up in a very small town in Texas and my dream was to be a comedian. So I thought that my path was through the Comedy Store. And I found myself at the Comedy Store hanging out with the Comedy Store comics. And I quickly started to realize that I didn't belong there. And I realized that my humor is very down to earth, very family, very rooted in other things. And the comedians that were at the store, even though they're my friends and I think they're great, I started to realize that I was more of a Ray Romano, a Jim Gaffigan, Ron White, you know, all these guys who don't live in LA and don't live their career at the Comedy Store. So I think honing my craft just really came from a combination of me being the guy from Texas, me honing my skills at the Comedy Store, and then now leaving back to Texas to live pretty much a normal life. I mean, my neighbor, you know, runs several restaurants, and my other neighbor is an architect, and the neighbor across the street is an FBI agent and a Texas Ranger. So
sounds like good material.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You know, living that regular life for me is what I talk about. And standing at the Comedy Store till 4 o'clock in the morning is not me. So I think it was a combination of, you know, being a down to earth person who likes to be very normal and having this dream of being a comedian. I think that combination has created my style.
It definitely seems like it. And I just looked it up. It's Tom Dreesen.
Tom Dreesen, yes, of course. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm comedy theme, but I love it. But again, Dave, if you looked up Steve, he's a master in his own right. That's why I wanted to know how that kind of developed, and we'll go more into that story. Go ahead, Dave, your next question.
So I want to know, if does this stuff come from real life situations or you just make it up out of your head?
I don't make anything up. I really try to keep it very close to my sleeve. Very real. Now, there are circumstances where it didn't happen to me and my wife. I witnessed it, or it happened to a friend, and then I make it personal to me because I was there. Sure. But it has to be real. It has to be honest. I remember I had that moment where I was telling a joke about my cousin's life. Okay. And what happened to my cousin was, in high school, he came home drunk when he was supposed to be spending the night at his friend's house. And he scared his parents while they were having sex. 16 years later, he asks his dad, he says, "Dad, why do I have a brother 16 years younger than me?" And his dad goes, "Remember that night when you came home? You scared me. I didn't take it out of your mom. And now you have your brother." So I remember telling that story on stage, and then people would come up to me and go, "I didn't know you had a brother." And I felt like a fraud.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I cannot tell stories on stage that aren't about me and my life.
Interesting. And so when you talk about, you know, comedy, you said the Comedy Store just didn't go for you. So did you think that your comedy career, because it just really wasn't what your fit was going to just fail, and that you were going to go to do something else when you moved?
No, I always knew that I was going to make it. Look, it went great for me at the Comedy Store, and I got plenty of spots, you know, in between the greatest comedians on planet Earth and in the toughest room.
Some of them when you were working with.
I mean, you were just talking about Joe Rogan, you know. I mean, Joe Rogan was becoming Joe Rogan when I was hanging out at the Comedy Store. And, you know, I've been on stage with Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle. I brought Dave Chappelle on stage and, you know, Andrew Dice Clay and I mean, the greats. Bill Burr. I mean, Bill Burr and I go back 20 years. Kevin Hart, you know. So I knew I was good enough and I knew I belonged there. I just quickly realized that I didn't have to be there to have a career. And I thought it was the other way around. I thought I had to be there in order for me to have a career. Yeah. And once I realized that, oh, there's other guys that aren't at the Comedy Store that have huge careers. You know, Brian Regan is not a Comedy Store guy, but he's one of the best and most watched comedians on planet Earth. So, you know, Russell Peters, I mean, all these guys. And I just realized that, you know what, hanging out at the Comedy Store till 3 o'clock in the morning is not for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You know, a lot of comedians would say how, oh, I got my break from Johnny Carson when I was on his show, et cetera. When did you realize that you were going to be big? And when did you make enough money to pay the bills? And it wasn't just a hobby.
I've been very lucky that I've been paying the bills doing stand-up comedy since I was 20. Now, were the bills paid for a very nice place? No. But I have been doing it professionally, but I never got in it for the money. And my career, I just kept working and working and figuring out a way.
Never get
and up. Well, if Hollywood's not going to film my special, I'll film it myself. And then to wake up today to be hugely successful, I'm surprised every day when I look at the things that I have from stand-up comedy, because I didn't get into comedy going, oh, one day I'm going to have several homes and I'm going to have the cars. And, you know, I got into comedy because I loved it and I just kept doing it. And then I find myself being successful now with kids and a wife. Now money is important. And I want to make sure that my kids and my wife have things. So everybody that buys a ticket to me is my employer. They employ me. So I take care of them. Every single one of them.
Now, well, what's that big break though?
So no, that's what I was about to ask too.
I think the big break, I got a Showtime special, and me being Mexican American, they go, Steve, we're gonna put it on Cinco de Mayo. I'm like, oh, perfect. Yeah, let's be a little racist about it, right? They didn't air it much, but because of that, I was able to produce my own special, and I produced a special called Relatable, and nobody was. I didn't have a network. I didn't know where it was gonna go. And we ended up selling it to Netflix. And that's when I thought, okay, here comes my break. Well, it didn't happen. What I did was I took clips from that special and I put them on Facebook. I put them on Instagram. I put them on the web. And then one of them went viral. And when that one went viral, it changed my life. In a matter of a year, it had 140 million views.
Oh my gosh.
Goodness.
And now, pretty much every video I put out there, you know, within time breaks the million mark pretty easily. And, you know, ultimately, I think my big break was Facebook and, you know, people sharing my material. You know, Netflix didn't buy my special and pay me well. I'm not a Netflix comic. I got on Netflix because I sold it to them. And I did the same thing with the next special. I put it on Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime didn't produce my special. I did. Me and my wife. And then my life in quarantine, we decided to do the same thing. So every single special that's out there, I did it myself. And the big break comes from when somebody sees a bit, likes it, shares it, and then they can go back and watch the full special.
You see, what's amazing is looking at, and see, that's a great point that you make, that your branding, Steve, is Netflix, Amazon, you know, that, wow, you made it. Meaning, but it's not the money. The money would be all those views and then getting, and then that explodes and you could sell it for different pricing down the line. But really what people don't understand is that they can make it not just on broadcast TV or Netflix or certain things, if they can produce some sort of viral content, correct?
Absolutely. You know, and I think Joe Rogan proved that. I mean, you know, Joe Rogan had a lot of success as a talent, but when he started distributing his interest to the world, it changed everything. And it's funny because my managers and agents, they go, Steve, don't share what you know with other comedians. And I go, it doesn't matter, because if they're not good, it's not going to be terrible.
And do you think you had the right team too? Even though you produced the great content, you think the right team to make sure it went viral? Because, you know, you do these studies and YouTube. No, but so you say no. Okay, that's interesting.
No,
but
it was
it's me organic. And my wife,
me and my wife were literally, she was my social media professional, which she knew nothing about, and I was the stand up, and it organically went viral. And then we put a video out several months after, thinking, oh well, maybe that one bit, you know, was a fluke. We put a video out a month later called the McDonald's, and that one now is over 100 million views. So,
and see, and Dave doesn't understand how much money you can make on YouTube.
Oh, I understand.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the YouTube, even Facebook now, we're monetizing.
Retire on YouTube.
I'll tell you this story. Before I went viral with that clip, I was making $250 on a Wednesday at the Brea Improv in California. I call up the Improv and I go, I want a Wednesday. And they go, the 250? And I go, no, I want the door. And literally that night, I walked out of there with $6,000.
Wow.
From 1 week to the next. That's how crazy.
Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness.
You know, and then because I do everything organically, I make sure to take care of the fan. I go out of my way. I have an organization called Helicopters for Heroes where we take care of veterans. I make sure to give them a gift at every one of my shows. I give every veteran in my show a koozie, and I make sure that the audience knows that I care about them because they are my livelihood.
Yeah, I just gave a gift to them, and I think it's them, but I'm going to have lunch with Dennis Prager as a result, which I'm looking forward to. But yeah, I love helping vets. How much practice do you do with your material? You know, the new material, the old material, do you forget it? Yeah, I got to keep practicing it or you'll forget it.
I have a steel trap, man. I have an amazing memory because I'm dyslexic and I was forced to remember things because I'm embarrassed to write. I can't spell. So my memory is very strong and it's all in there. But, you know, when I got unemployed for 6 months, and not being on stage and not getting the reps, I was afraid. I was scared. And I got back on stage. And instead of doing the old material, I started talking about my life in quarantine because I had just lived it.
Yeah.
And I was living it. And then all of a sudden, I found myself with almost 40 minutes of material. I told my wife, we got to put this out there.
It's for so definitely. And see, I'm interested in that because my life in quarantine is going on right now still. And that's why my beard's like this, Steve. And yeah, that six kids. Too. So that's why, you know, I'm just living, right? And the every day is the same. There's no difference. Like I was telling Mark Rippon, I interviewed Brett Favre, but I don't remember when I interviewed Brett. I don't know how many months ago it was. I forgot because that
was a week ago.
And I felt, Steve, the same thing you did when we went in quarantine. Oh no, my online business is done. What am I going to do? How am I going to survive? And so what is that mindset of quarantine coming up with your material? I'm sure it really resonates with people when you released it.
Yeah, you know, it was, I have a, you know, Mike's brand of stand-up comedy is observational storytelling. So I literally just told the story. And then, you know, I work with another writer named Brian Hart. And, you know, Brian looked at me and he goes, just tell the story in order. Talk about from the shutdown, you getting home, your experience with that, and then just telling an order. So I did, and I told the story of, you know, I went from, you know, my wife panicking and cleaning and toilet paper being off the shelves to me being tired of sitting on the couch and going, well, that's it. I'm doing all the honeydews. I'm going to Home Depot and I'm going to start working.
That's what I do too. Me too. Giant Eagle, which is our grocery store. And I go everywhere shopping now. It used to be you go shopping, but it kind of saves us money at the end of the day. Steve. Yeah, I'm going shopping. And when we go for shopping, we'll get a shopping cart and get six items. And it'll take us 3 hours.
Well, and like I say, dude, my yard couldn't be any nicer right now. I did so much yard work, you know, and my wife would go, why are you outside? And I go, because you're in there. That's why. And no matter how much you love your spouse, we are not meant to spend every single day and every single minute together.
Amen. So you got any tips for a guy like me who, you know, wants to just do it just to, I'm a speaker and it helps my speaking, right? Cause you got to think quickly on your feet. What I did last time is I just listened to the internet of all these jokes and only the ones that made me laugh, not chuckle or smile, but laugh. I wrote those down.
Right.
I had about 10 of them. I memorized them and, added a little of my story weaved into it and I got laughs. What kind of tips would you recommend for my next
time? Well, I mean, look, I think you take what you do here on the radio show and take that to stand up. I think a lot of people think that being a stand up means that you have to get a laugh every 2 seconds. You're more powerful as a performer if you're interesting, right? I always tell comics, I'm like, hey, just because you're not getting a laugh, if they're not heckling you and they're quiet, you're an interesting person. And if you start with being an interesting person and telling a story,
right,
then from there, as a talented person like you are, you'll add the fun.
That's great advice.
There you go, Dave. You just got a compliment from Steve. And that's awesome. And see, and I was learning from Tom as well in that whole process, Dreesen again, about that of breaking the ice. He always said he made fun of himself before the first thing, that some story at the beginning to break the ice, that he ended up not getting a certain car, certain things to make the people laugh, to get the break the ice, then ask him to applaud. He really wanted to gain control of the audience. And I'm sure that's the same way with you, Steve, in certain ways. But I love this whole quarantine thing. I don't want to give it away, but you know, I have so many stories we could talk about, Steve, just that are awful stories, right? Like, are you serious? This is what we're gonna do. Remember, like the first couple months we couldn't go anywhere. And then the cool thing was, we're gonna prepare meals every day. What's a cool meal we're gonna prepare today? And then we're just thinking, and no one, you know, the grocery store's only open like 8 hours, and you're like, okay, let's go prepare this meal. And what we're figuring about this meal. And then I take my daughter with me, and my wife say, why are you taking your oldest? She's going to get COVID. I said, no. She's going to help me shop, because I need a professional shopper. I can't do this alone. And isn't the pain, those lists are awful.
Well, and you know, and it was one of those things too, where I had written this really great joke, and going back to my stand up and me being sincere and honest, I really couldn't tell this joke because it wasn't real to me. But I remember writing this great joke, exactly like you were talking about, where I was taking my son to the grocery store and my wife going, I don't want you to get him COVID. Right. And I go, but honey, he's low risk. Right. And then the joke was, I take my son to the grocery store, who is low risk, so that when my mother-in-law comes over, I can be like, hey, go hug grandma. You know, but you know, I love the joke, but it's just mean spirited. And I just, it was off brand for me, but it was one of those things where it was really, really funny.
Wow. What, you got any plans for the future? Any future passions, or this is it?
This is it, man. As long as I can keep doing stand-up and paying the bills, I'm a very happy man. I'm very happy in my marriage. We have a almost 3-month-old daughter that, you know, my life in quarantine, we talk about how valuable that little material. Yeah, well, you know, we had a miscarriage, and I talk about the miscarriage in my life in quarantine, and people thought I was crazy for talking about it, but the outpour of support that we've gotten from people saying, oh my God, thank you for talking about it. Oh my God, my husband is now having a conversation about our miscarriage. You know, so I'm so happy right now, and life is good. And even though COVID has made me unemployed, and I made way less money this year than I did in the past couple of years, I'm happy.
But you got to be happy also the touring, that you're going to get back touring. So let's talk about that a little bit.
I'm so happy to be connecting with people. And I selfishly want to say that I think comedians help. I think musicians help. I think mental health is a very serious thing. So for me, when I'm on stage and I get to see people laughing harder than they did pre-pandemic, it makes me feel good that they're enjoying it. So that's what's most important to me about touring. And I miss cities. I miss going out of town. I miss being in another city.
So do you try new material? A lot of comedians will go down to the improv and just try it out, see if it works. What do you try your new material on, or don't you?
I'm lucky enough to be touring all the time. So I'll throw in new material while I'm touring, you know, and for me, it's like, I don't need to walk into the comedy store at midnight on a Saturday. If I'm off on a Saturday, I don't want to be at the comedy store. I want to be with my family.
Yeah.
So I work that new material and sometimes, and as you know, sometimes nothing happens. So there's no new material to talk about.
Right.
You know, there's no inspiration. So when that inspiration comes and my wife or something happens in my life, I go, I got to go on stage and talk about it.
From what I've seen and heard of you, you're more of a guy who tells funny stories than someone who's just cracking jokes left and right.
Yeah. You know what? I think a lot of comedians sit down with a joke book and they open up their joke book and they go, okay, let me write a joke about X, Y, and Z. That's not me. I tell stories about my life. I make them fun. I make them interesting, but I also try to reveal psychologically who I am and the struggles that I'm going through. And I think that that's what resonates with people, is when they see that I'm struggling with my marriage, just like you are. I think the vulnerability of it all is what is the value in it.
Yeah. Great. That's fantastic because people can relate to you. They can understand I'm going through the same crap you're going through because it's just, it's impossible. We need to get outside. We need to travel. We need to do things. There's about 20% of this country that are doing these things. They're taking risks. They're doing these things and fine. But some professions, nothing's happening. Businesses. I have a day job as well, and I'm not gotten to travel to Vegas or Houston for the year. So that was a whole week away twice, Houston and right. Vegas, nothing. So now hopefully in 2021 in July, I'll be in Vegas, but we're dealing with those things. So that's the thing. So Steve, where are you going to be touring? Do you have the tour set up pretty much like best place to go, name cities, or is it going to be a big, big tour?
Well, I'm trying to tour where I can. So it's always changing and growing, but you know, Texas, of course, my great state, you know, they've been open for quite some time. So I've been touring Texas. I'm in Phoenix this week and it was sold out before I got here, which was great. Next week, mostly outdoors. No, it's a comedy club. Oh. I'm at the Stand Up Live Comedy Club and they're doing 50% capacity. They have plexiglass on the tables to separate people and it's a mandatory mask situation. But I'm in Phoenix this week. Next week, I have a private event for a children's hospital where I'm raising money. And then the week after that, I'm in Panama City, Florida, which is, again, it's at Hurricane Harry's. It's not even a comedy club. So we're being creative.
Are you the most employed? I'm sorry to interrupt. Are you the most employed comedian right now? Because I don't see a lot of comedians out there doing what you're doing.
People are telling me that I am. You know, my agents and managers are like, man, Steve, you're the only one working. But I also have to say, everybody should have the right to choose, right? Of course. Sure. But I don't like when I hear performers saying, oh, I can't perform. No. You don't want to perform. If you want to perform, Texas, Florida, Arizona, they're open.
Yep.
They're at 50% capacity. You know, in Texas, I was doing outdoor shows where normally it would be a 2,000 outdoor venue. We put 1,000 people in there, 6 feet apart, and they had to buy the whole table. So. Yeah. You know, I want to perform. I want to work. And I think that I am providing a service to people that need to have a laugh. So, you know, I'll be in Pittsburgh, which, you know, Pittsburgh is one of my.
I'm Pittsburgh. He's in LA. I'm in Pittsburgh, but I can't wait.
Oh, dude, you know, Pittsburgh is such, is one of the greatest American towns. I really have to say that, you know, especially as a Cowboy fan, it's hard to say. But Pittsburgh is just such a great town with hardworking people and a beautiful city. When you come across that bridge and the city opens
it's the basic thing. You go to the airport, you go through that bridge and you get to see Pittsburgh and boom, it all hits you right at once. That's the greatest thing in the world. I agree.
So it's one of my favorite cities.
And Permane Brothers. And Permane Brothers, right?
Oh my God. And now there's one right by the comedy club. Put a Permane. Well, it's not the real Permane's. It's the Permane's like,
yeah, the fake permit, not the fake one. But did you know that they said if they sign what's his name from Houston, they're going to change the name from Permane Brothers to the other brothers instead.
Oh, I saw that they were going to do that. Yeah. But Pittsburgh's just one of those towns that I miss. I miss going to Pittsburgh. I miss the atmosphere. I miss the town. And even L.A., you know, I do. Normally, I would be in California almost 8 to 9 weeks a year. San Diego, Orange County, Brea, Huntington.
Unfortunately, we're closed.
completely closed, and I miss it, you know, because you know, I lived in LA for 14 years, and although I don't want to live there ever again, it's a great place to visit.
You know, I do a lot of traveling during COVID, and I get a lot of flack for it. A lot of people are crazy and passionate, and they go, "How could you do that? How could you do you get any flack for doing what you're doing?"
Sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll say something that, well, and a lot of times too, that people that aren't married, right. Or what's even funnier is that, you know, sometimes I'll get a divorcee yelling at me about my conversation I have with my marriage.
A heckler, huh?
Yeah. You know, and then I'll go, wait a minute, are you married? And they're like, no, I'm divorced. I'm like, well, then you really don't get it.
So it's right back to him.
I stay away from politics.
Okay.
You know, I stay away from politics completely. My philosophy is you're coming to laugh and get away from all the BS, and you don't want to hear political BS.
Is your stuff clean, Steve? Most of your stuff?
Mostly.
Yeah, I always say that it is clean humor with strong language.
So when, yeah. Because you're such a successful comedian, when are we going to see you acting?
Whenever they want me to, you know, we've
yeah, get your own series.
Well, no, but here's something that I catch a lot of flack for. And you know, it's funny because I'll talk about this on, I was on Bert Kreischer's podcast talking about this, and people were like, oh my God, Trevino, get over it. The fact of the matter is that I'm Mexican American and I look like this. I can't tell you how many auditions I went on where they wanted me to be the valet parker, the gardener, have an accent. And I refused to play that part. I refused to be the stereotype. And, you know, they don't know. And they, by meaning Hollywood, they don't know what to do with me. You know, I can't.
One day they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I got an idea for you, Steve. You're already doing well on YouTube. Create your own show of your family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why we did the podcast. And the podcast is a weekly update of here's me and my wife and what we went through this week. And it's somewhat of a reality show. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's another reason on My Life in Quarantine, my son goes on stage. My wife comes out on stage. My mom comes out on stage. My father-in-law comes out on stage. To show America that, hey, this is a real Mexican-American family that lives in this country. And guess what? I didn't grow up on welfare. My parents aren't from Mexico. You know, I'm not ghetto. I don't rape, murder,
right.
And sell drugs. This is a real family that lives in America who is proud to be American. My father served in the Vietnam War. And until they get that, I'm just going to keep doing it.
Dave, everyone has a podcast, and I don't know if Steve's on Clubhouse yet, but everyone has a podcast, and I'm becoming this podcast expert on Clubhouse. I'm loving it more than anything. Do you have an iPhone, Steve?
I don't have an iPhone.
That's why you're not on Clubhouse yet.
I'm a stubborn Android user.
Yeah, once they open
it up, we all used to be
about Steve and podcasting is it's something you got to love, but I think a reality show – you got to do something. These YouTubers are making too much money. Then you'll tour when you want to tour. Then you'll get your big deal. And that's my recommendation for you.
If Ray Romano can do it, you can do it.
Okay.
Ray Romano. Okay.
Well, why don't we talk about the other ones? What does George Lopez think? Has he ever thought of collaborating with you?
You know, George Lopez and I, you know, and I'm always honest and I'm probably going to catch hell for it. But George Lopez and I have had a very up and down relationship. You know, we've been very friendly in the past and we've been complete angry at each other. And you know, it's been one of those relationships where I am frustrated with George Lopez for not hiring Latinos on his TV shows, not bringing the Mexican-American to the forefront when it comes to TV and movies and bringing up talent. And, you know, talking to George, I've learned to understand more of where he's coming from, but you know, it is a struggle, and I'm a fan of George Lopez. I think we need George Lopez. I think as a Mexican-American, he's very, very funny to me. However, him being the only voice of the Mexican-American out there
makes no sense.
The issue that I have.
And maybe you have to do a serious acting, Steve. Maybe you got to get a serious acting role in one of those that's really big, and then they say, oh my gosh, you're the next big thing, and then you'll be doing an action movie with somebody. Who knows? You never know. That's how this world works, and you keep going viral, you will. All right, Dave has his final question, is a caregiving question. That's why we call him Caregiver Dave. He's not a caretaker. He's a caregiver. So go ahead, Dave, and ask
him. I'm not a gardener. I'm a caregiver. So I've been married for 45 years. About halfway through, my wife had this headache, right? It's almost good material. Headache of her life. She wanted me to call Dr. Kevorkian and put her out of her misery. But it was a holiday. We didn't go to the doctor because, you know, they'll probably tell us that we'll take two aspirin, call me in the morning. Well, it turned into a stroke. She lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And the next 2.5 years was like a living hell for both of us. We almost broke up. But we hung in there, you know, and our love was rekindled. And I realized there's so many other caregivers out there suffering, going through what I went through. And I figured if I can teach them what I learned, then, you know, maybe I can save them. And so now I travel all over the country speaking on stages. I've been on 35 TV shows, just helping caregivers stay alive because 30% of them die before their loved ones do. And I wrote 4 books. I believe that everybody, you, me, Neil, one day you're either going to become a caregiver or you're going to need a caregiver. So you better learn how to do it right now while you get the time. Not like me, you know, I didn't even know what a caregiver was. And all of a sudden I am one. So has caregiving touched your life, Steve?
You know, it was interesting. You know, my wife's grandfather he passed away a couple of years ago at 89 years old. And I remember my wife goes, you know, you see, he used to smoke and he got cancer. I told you, you know, you got to stop the tobacco.
89.
And I don't smoke. I use chewing tobacco. But I go, listen, honey, if I become 89 years old and I get cancer, I beat cancer. But when it comes to caregiving, he was taking care of his wife.
Yeah, that's
tough. And he refused for anybody else to take care of her. And it was one of those moments for me that changed my life, watching him be a caregiver, watching the passion that he had to take care of his wife, who was now breathing through her neck and bedridden, and he would have to turn her so that she wouldn't get her bed sores and change her catheters. And to me, he changed my life when I saw this man love his wife and be a caregiver the way that he was, that it just made me enjoy and appreciate my wife that much more. So if there was a way for a caregiver to affect me, I think that was one of the best ways that it could affect me. And it made me realize that, hey, one of these days, me and my wife are going to be them. And I hope that I'm as much of a man as he was, taking care of his wife that late in his life. So that's what I would say that helped me with caregiving. Yeah.
Well, file that in the back of your brain, because one day you'll either need one or you are one.
That's right.
So I started a website, caregiverdave.com, and lots of tools, resources for everybody. So thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, and Steve, I just, again, love this. I'm going to put this on the calendar. July, Pittsburgh. I'm going to interrupt in a second to make sure I didn't talk in front. Now I had perfect timing. I don't care where you keep it going. No need to edit life in general.
Yeah, no, this is perfect for my act. Yeah.
Life happens.
It's perfect for your act, Steve, but we're going to definitely hang out in Pittsburgh and look forward
Paul, to it. Paul, do you need your penis pump?
Oh, goodness gracious. There goes the comedy. Steve, best place to connect where people can get tickets and stuff. Where can they go?
SteveTrevino.com. You can find everything Steve Trevino there. And of course, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You know, you put Steve Trevino in a search engine and you are going to get Steve Trevino everything. And then Google's going to say, you also want to know who Steve Trevino's wife is. So you can find everything.
So Steve, did you Google me yet? That's what I always tell. It's in my bio in Clubhouse. Google me. So
I will Google
me. Google me and see which interviews you enjoyed best. But I look forward to meeting you in Pittsburgh in July. And I hope that it's not the same time I'm in Vegas, but we'll be happy if both those things happen, because we're going back to normal and life will go back to normal. And all the connections I've made during the pandemic, I'm tired of these Zooms. I want to get out there and get on red carpets like Dave got to before the pandemic when I hooked him up on a red carpet in LA. I want to be on those.
Well, let me tell you what broke my heart. I get moved to play Caesars in Vegas, NFL draft week, and the pandemic hit. And you want to talk about, like, I mean, I had NFL backstage, everything, VIP, and then the pandemic hits, no NFL draft in Vegas. And I was like, oh my God, why me?
I'm going to be in Vegas May 6th. I forgot about that. When are you going to be there?
I don't know when I'm going to be there, but you need to go visit my friend Brad Garrett, because he's got, he's there at the MGM going right now. They moved him to one of the ballrooms. So they're doing stand up for the Brad Garrett Comedy Club in one of the ballrooms.
The Brad Garrett, isn't it?
Steve? Yes.
Well, everybody loves
Thank Brady. You for that too.
I'm 6'10", so we got to meet when I go to Vegas. You got to hook me up to meet Brad when I go out to Vegas.
When are you going?
In July.
You know yet?
Oh, okay. Oh, Neil, you're going to get to see eye to eye with Brad Garrett. The guy is 6'10",
11. Yeah, I'm 6'10" too. So we got to get a great picture together, Brad and I. And I'm a huge fan of Brad.
I always tell Brad, I'm like, how are you 6'10" and a comedian? You must have zero athletic ability.
I was a former professional wrestler, Steve, and that's where I was talking about the semi-concussion. So I guess I was a semi-athlete. But I thought, I did some Googling. Did Brad ever pro wrestle?
I don't think so, but he did open for Frank Sinatra and for years, and he was actually opening for Sammy Davis Jr. And he started his career when he was 18 years old.
Wow.
And when you go to his club, he has all this amazing memorabilia from old days Vegas. And it's just a really cool thing to see.
Is he full-time at MGM now?
Full-time.
Wow.
Well, how did those act? Last thing, I can't believe we're having such a great convo, but it's worth it. It's the end of the day. It's a Friday. Steve, how are the comics in Vegas surviving with the different acts? Are the acts back and everything in Vegas?
Vegas is open now again, right?
Yeah. I mean, there, you know, I know LA Comedy Club is doing shows. I want to say the Laugh Factory is doing shows. I do know that Brad Garrett is doing shows, and it's sad for me because Vegas was really becoming a huge comedy town. I mean, there was two comedy clubs downtown. Jimmy Kimmel had just opened his comedy club next to the Link. You had Brad Garrett's, you had LA Comedy Club, you had Laugh Factory, you had the Comic Strip coming into town. And it was just becoming old Vegas again, where, like, for example, last time I was there, I ended up hanging out with 10 of my friends that we never get to hang out because we're all headliners.
Wow.
Were they all downtown or on the Strip?
I mean, everybody was everywhere. You know, one guy was at, Brett Ernst was at the Laugh Factory, and Bert Kreischer was in town, and Tiffany Haddish was in town, and I was in town, and Butch Bradley was in town. So, I mean, literally we all were like, hey, wait a minute, you're in town? Oh, we should all hang. And now you've got 8 comedians hanging out in the lobby having drinks.
The Rat Pack.
Yeah, it was cool.
You should have filmed it.
You know, and of course Carrot Top and George Wallace and all those guys that have been there.
I've had
forever.
George on my show. I was trying to get set up interview with Carrot Top when I was in Vegas. It's funny, but it's just for work, and I'm calling places trying to get. I went and saw the Blue Man Group for free because I interviewed the Blue Man before, and it was just a blast in Vegas. But I said the next time before the pandemic, I was planning having a big event in the suite, bring celebrities up, interview all of them, and then the pandemic happened. But
yep, it breaks your heart.
But we're gonna get through this again. Steve Trevino.com for more information. And
absolutely,
we'll hang out, man. And appreciate you, Steve, and appreciate you, Dave. And guys, thanks. Take care.
All right, guys.
All right, bye-bye. Guys. Neil Haley, nice should take care, guys.